Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
How sweet that is. I am John DeSando.
And I am KG Klein.
And this is Double Take. We're almost at the end of summer.
And we almost got through a summer without a dinosaur movie. But I'm glad we have one.
It is not the end of dinosaur movies. All right, we're talking about the end of Oak Street, probably the candidate for the most seen dinosaur movie in a long time.
This has been a surprise summer hit, fairly low-budget movie, and directed by a director that's a favorite of mine. His name is David Robert Mitchell. He's from Detroit, like myself, and he's best known for a very kinky, provocative horror film from a few years back called It Follows,
yep,
which very low budget, but it made a mint because it was really breaking new ground, something original in horror, which is hard to find. So I was very, very much anticipating this film, and it doesn't disappoint.
No. Can hear in your voice my opinion as well. It's not terrific. It's not a great film.
It's not a great script.
No.
It needed a lot more development. It's a very linear story. Suburban community from the 1980s finds itself overnight teleported back 65 million years. And their little community has been picked up and dropped like a Twilight Zone episode into the middle of a Jurassic world. And the dinosaurs start moving in.
Yeah.
And it turns into a carnage fest. It's not for the squeamish. There's some very, very graphic gore in this film.
But it has some of the familiar tropes. For instance, it's got to be at least a half an hour before we even see a tail of a dinosaur. I like the way that we know what's going to happen, where the people in the film do not know.
No, we see little hints. You'll see something in the background, something out in the woods.
Yes.
And the movie has been compared to Jurassic Park, which is a natural comparison.
I think so.
The script is not anywhere as good as Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park had many fascinating characters, all well played. It really did a nice job of having multiple subplots.
Right.
This movie, it's just focused on this one family, which is played by the mother is Anne Hathaway, the father is Ewan McGregor, and two really exceptional kid actors as their son and daughter.
Yeah.
And this is Anne Hathaway's chance to shine. She is absolutely fantastic in this film. She gives a performance. I don't think Jennifer Lawrence could have done better. It really surprises me how good she is at conveying such a wide range of emotions. She keeps this film together.
Yes, she does. For me, there's way too much crying and hugging.
Yes. Yes, I can't argue that. David Robert Mitchell.
Robert Mitchell. Good Lord, are you watching what's happening? Because given the moments that you're saying, and Anne Hathaway is a class act. This is a very good Hollywood star, and yet as taking the role of the heroine.
Yes.
Because Ewan McGregor's role is a little bit
weak. It's a throwaway. They never develop it. It's a pity that they use an actor of Ewan McGregor's caliber for this man-child role that really didn't need to be written that way. But it diverted all the focus onto Anne Hathaway's characters. And
yeah.
And when we talk about comparing this to Jurassic Park, a better Spielberg comparison would actually be Spielberg's War of the Worlds. Yes, where you had one character with his kids trying to get through this apocalypse, and the emphasis is on family and trying to save the kids no matter what the cost. This movie has its dark moments. It has its brighter moments, some happy moments. But again, not a very well-developed script, so it's very uneven.
The writer-director misses the chance of emphasizing the fact that this is underneath a satire of suburban America.
It's a satire of the relationships between neighbors.
Yes, very good.
Very, very nicely done in that respect. And the other thing that makes this movie stand out from other dinosaur films of recent years is movies like Jurassic Park are set in the present day. So the dinosaurs are roaming a modern landscape, modern plants, modern forests, you know, the island of the Jurassic Park movies. This one, the setting is a Jurassic forest. So something we're not used to seeing. Trees are 20 feet in diameter and 300 feet tall, and there's giant dragonflies flying around. So it's refreshing to see a movie where humans have gone back in time as opposed to dinosaurs being brought forward in time.
Yeah, you're going to see your old buddy T-Rex.
Oh, yeah. yeah, we're
going to
see.
You always have to have this Stegosaurus. And
an interesting take on them, most of them are covered in feathers. So they're running with this current science belief that, of course, birds evolved out of dinosaurs and that even dinosaurs of 100 million years ago may have already had feather covering.
But another thing that pleased me, and a little bit of an advance on this whole business, is that a couple of people get eaten.
Oh, several people
get
eaten.
I mean, I don't remember that from Jurassic Park. I don't remember.
Well, oh no, you had your few.
Did they? But they cut away on that. This one has them actually.
Spielberg tended to close the door before it got too violent because Jurassic Park was aimed more at a PG audience than a PG-13, and they wanted the 10-year-olds to be able to come and enjoy this. Now you bring a 10-year-old to this movie, they're going to be traumatized for life.
The devastation of the neighborhood. Metaphorically, is a variation of the home invasion motif. That is, it's invaded by dinosaurs.
It's invaded by an outside force, and the neighbors have to decide, are they going to continue to be isolated little family, or are they going to form as one community? And it kind of reminds me a little bit of a great Twilight Zone episode called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. This little neighborhood is suddenly cut off, and they have to decide, are they going to band together, or are they going to tear each other apart?
And this allows the very prevalent current motif, I mean within the last 10 to 20 years, even for Marvel movies, of family and of getting back to family. And it's modern in the sense that, yes, family is fragmented. And so they've picked up on this.
Yeah,
for
this
all
is a family
movies.
On the verge of divorce at the start of the movie.
It's disintegrating. Yeah. I have to admit that the kids don't impress me in this one. No, they don't. And I know that the people
I like them. I particularly like the two girls. Their daughter and then the girl they meet.
Right, and the young woman that they meet. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were really, really good. And
I do love the touch of the boy with the toy arrow.
Yes. Who cannot enjoy Anne Hathaway blasting the head off of a velociraptor with a shotgun? Get a hold of a shot.
They have a little blood.
They have quite a lot of blood.
Yeah. You know, so there's some good touches like that. But mostly it's about the family getting together and surviving. Yeah. Now, this means it excludes most, except for the old ladies, most of the neighbors. It becomes a very insulated.
The neighbors come in and go because, again, it's such a linear story, which means it stays focused on Anne Hathaway and the kids and doesn't veer off into other subplots. So this director is not big on large casts and subplots. Now, part of that is that it costs money to subplots, and he just doesn't have the budget.
Yeah.
But the same thing with It Follows. It Follows was really just focused on this one girl, and characters come in, characters go, but the whole story stayed on this one girl. And the same thing with this, it focuses on Anne Hathaway. Characters come and go, but we see Anne Hathaway in almost every scene.
The thrust of the movie, being the survival of the family, isolates the family from the rest. And you're quite right. There are effects on the neighbors, but you have that one stereotypical neighbor next door who's bitching and moaning about the dog.
About the dog,
Starbuck.
Dog digging. Yeah, getting yes. A throwback and homage to Battlestar Galactica, and the kid has a Battlestar Galactica poster on his wall.
Yeah, I guess I like that very much. The fact that when it comes to it, you're going to survive with your family.
Yeah, and I just wish the father was a more developed character.
Oh, I've never found
Ewan McGregor annoying before this.
No, I didn't. I mean, I loved him in Moulin Rouge.
Well, I've loved him in all the Star Wars movies.
Yes, and he looks lost in this.
He was given nothing to do.
Where I think that the writer-director missed it is there was something valuable in the fact that McGregor's character had lost his job.
He lost his job. He's a whiny, childish guy, and you can see why Anne Hathaway's character is thinking about divorcing him, because he's really contributing nothing to the family. He's dragging them down.
But he is delivering pizzas.
He's delivering
without
pizzas.
Telling them that he's lost his job.
He hasn't told them that he's lost the job, and he's delivering pizzas. He's got the pizza sign on the top of the car.
Right.
That brings up a point. I do like the fact that we have something of a surprise ending. Now, we won't give that away, of course, but it's a very interesting, unexpected ending. Very Twilight Zone. As the movie ended, I thought, where is this movie going to go? And I was happy with the way it resolves.
There are some people who say, well, we told where the dinosaurs come from and so on. They come from this transparent ball.
Well, there's some kind of a portal has opened up, and it has had the community inside, And that portal continues. In order to have a resolution to the story, they have to have a way to for the portal to reappear.
And
the portal does reappear.
Even a half-brain can figure out how it's going to end. If you've ever seen anything with time warp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you
The ending with the husband kind of surprised me a little bit. Yeah. I thought that was... And it leaves a few questions open as to what happens to Anne Hathaway's other Anne Hathaway. But that's as far as I really want to go with the ending.
But
see
I'll
the
tell
movie,
you, Ken,
enjoy it.
And, I mean, you're suggesting one thing you need to know about this film is it's not serious about itself. And it's not serious about its science.
Time travel movies are always problematic, John. They will always be a hole that you can't quite fill. And Spielberg ran into that with Back to the Future and managed to find clever ways around it that actually worked. But yeah, you're always risking trouble when you do a time travel movie.
Yeah, right. Ken, you know, you've seen a new movie that I'd like you to talk about. Let's do that after the break.
Okay.
And right now, the film is The End of Oak Street. It is not yet the end of summer, and it is not yet the end of this kind of.
It's your dinosaur movie for the summer. It's gory. It's violent. It is fun, but don't take the kids.
Yeah. I would say 13, 14-year-olds.
14-year-olds, you're fine.
Just fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its funny moments, but it is graphic when the dinosaurs get into the eating part, and you're going to only traumatize a kid if you bring one.
Yeah. And if you can see the metaphor for all the dinosaurs that live in your suburb and that you just as soon be away from, then here you can. For me, the only sympathetic, really sympathetic neighbor is the old lady with the shotgun.
The old lady with the shotgun.
Yes, I thought that's a great touch.
Well, and the librarian. The librarian's
Thank you.
Also
yeah,
sympathetic.
The librarian.
Yeah.
Ken, I know that the end of Oak Street is not the end of your commentary on this film. But before we go into it more, I'd like to hear from you. I always love your recommendations. You're the best person I know for being on top of movies. Now, you've recently seen one that sounded a little bizarre.
There is one that just opened this weekend. I would love to have done a show on it. We may not get the opportunity to do that, so let's touch upon it here if we don't. Yeah. The very provocative title, Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma.
Yeah.
Now, this is the same writer-director who brought us I Saw the TV Glow a couple of years ago.
Weird film.
Very weird film. They are a non-binary. They don't identify as any gender. And they are probably the premier director in queer cinema right now. This Teenage Sex and Death in Camp Miasma is a take on 80s slasher horror films, particularly Friday the 13th and another series called Sleepaway Camp, and how all these movies created a franchise that went on for film after film after film with decreasingly bad results as they wandered away from their source.
So we're back in the 80s
again. We're back in 1980, which was the year that...
And 82 was our Oaks?
80 was the year that Friday the 13th came out.
Okay.
Now, this director recalls having seen Sleepaway Camp when she was eight, or they were eight, I should say, and it had a really real impact on them. They really, the director, fixated on the killer in Sleepaway Camp. And then it was only when they got older that they realized how incredibly transphobic and homophobic these slasher films are, because if there is a character in the film who is gay or is non-binary, that character is almost always the killer. This began to eat away at them, and they thought, well, let's develop a horror film franchise with a transgender killer and explore this subject, which is what they did. And this is an extremely complicated film. It's really difficult to talk about it in a short period of time. But the whole point here is that you have the original final girl from this very first film, who is played by Gillian Anderson from The X-Files, is living alone in isolation on the campground where they filmed the original movie, dressed something like Sunset Boulevard. A young, fresh director who's had a success with a LGBTQ-themed film, very similar to the story of the director itself, decides she wants to reinvent this 80s franchise and bring back the original final girl from the first movie. But it doesn't go any way the way you think it would. She ends up getting into a relationship, a sexual relationship, with this much older actress, it starts dealing with some very fascinating queer topics. So if you are a fan of queer cinema, this is a really interesting film to watch. It is not for everybody. It definitely, you have to be the right audience to appreciate this film. But yeah, if you like to explore queer cinema, this is one worth seeing.
Well, less complicated, not as directly related to the end of Oak Street as it might be, but I'm fascinated by the home invasion theme. Thought I might throw out a few that I have enjoyed over the years. And I get the feeling, even from End of Oak Street, that this is about our home being invaded. Draw Dogs with Dustin Hoffman captures what Oak Street captures for me, which is we feel so complacent about our safety. We're just so certain mm-hmm. that now we have our home, that we are safe and happy. It does not happen. Sometimes we just think we're impervious to what's happening out there, and it
happens. Part of that is because we are living in America as opposed to living in Iran or the Middle East or places that are vulnerable to much bigger and more powerful nations.
Sure. And the much lighter fare about the invasion is Home Alone. Back in 1999, I think, for instance, we don't have many people out in our audience who are going to see this Camp Miasma sexual thing. I mean, I think that there are a few who might. But everybody has in one way or the other seen Home
Alone.
Well,
it's been on TV so often, so often.
And I like it's lighthearted, but still it's home invasion. Don't we have a BB gun in that?
Yeah, like that? Oh, we have everything. Everything that the clever little kid could come up with.
One darker that I've always been impressed by, Wait Until Dark.
Yeah.
In which our major character played by Audrey Hepburn is blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this makes it doubly vulnerable for her. She's alone. And she's blind. She is being invaded. And I just love the fact that it takes that home invasion to another level. And metaphorically, of course, we're all blind to what the possibilities may happen to us.
And it really elevates the vulnerability.
Yeah.
And which is part of the home invasion story is how vulnerable is that character
yes.
whose home is being invaded or characters.
Yes, right. Yeah. One that brings things together to me is Panic Room. Back in 2002.
Yeah.
With Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster.
And where she has her own room to protect herself.
Protect herself that she can retreat to.
Yeah, that she can retreat to, which, again, in the figurative way, mm-hmm. is what we all think our home is going to be. It's going to be protected like that panic room.
Well, I'm going to throw out there my favorite home invasion film.
Oh, good.
One of the most important films of the last 100 years, Clockwork Orange.
Great choice.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange. I mean, that scene with Malcolm McDowell, right out of the book, right out of Anthony Burgess's book, with the addition of Singing in the Rain, which makes one of the
even
quintessential
better.
Great moments in cinema. Very, very difficult to watch. Very graphic.
Yes.
But yes, we cannot talk about home invasion films without talking about that scene from Clockwork Orange.
I think that's an excellent choice. A more modern one, just about... maybe about 6 years ago, captured some of the modern motifs. And this is about an Airbnb, the rental.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two couples. They're there feeling very happy about being away and suddenly realizing that they're being watched. And it put me on guard about Airbnb. I mean, there are some ways and times that you can't avoid, just as in Oak Street. There's sometimes it's not your fault, but you have to decide how you're going to respond.
Well, and on that subject, we had an interesting film with Willem Dafoe a couple of years ago where he invades an unoccupied apartment and the owner has laid a trap.
Oh, my gosh.
And he can't get out.
Wow, good choice.
Yes, he's trapped in the apartment, forced to eat the fish in the aquarium to survive.
Oh.
He's there to steal works of art.
Oh,
the owner of
the
apartment has turned it into a nightmare trap.
And nobody better than Dafoe.
Almost a one-man film. Dafoe really shines in that film, and it's a very, very clever film about revenge for anyone who might try to invade your home. And when you have the wealth to be able to prepare such a trap.
We could look back now on science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what End of Oak Street is, among other things. Some might call it a horror.
You could almost say that dinosaur films are a genre unto themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, definitely science fiction, because it does have this time portal element to it, which I wish was better developed in the film. The writer-director could have done more with this movie. Now, I know that he was functioning under a very tight budget, didn't get as much funding as he had hoped, which is always the case.
And you know he's influenced by Rod Serling, but he doesn't seem to be picking up on
it. I'm not sure he is, because he's not that old. When he made It Follows, he was in his 20s, a movie which, by the way, I absolutely love, because having grown up in Detroit, it was so great to see all these Detroit filming locations. I used to see movies in the Redford Theater. They set the theater scenes in that movie. And I really wish that he had done a little bit more with this movie to develop the setting, to develop more homes. Because we really only know Anne Hathaway's home. We peripherally know
like
the neighbor's home.
I like that point a lot.
Yeah, we know a little bit about the librarian's home and the writer, the elderly woman. Beyond that, we know nothing about the community itself. And I really wish that that had been developed just a little bit more.
I'm trying to think if the community is involved in A Quiet Place. That is more insular, right?
Yeah, not so much. And that's another one where the focus is on the family.
Yes.
And surviving the apocalypse.
Yes, yeah.
And then in the sequel, they expand the story to the origin and the whole.
Yeah.
And the sequel, I think, is a much better film than the original one because it is a broader subject. We're taking into consideration the whole fall of civilization as opposed to this just little one isolated family struggling. I like a bigger story when we're dealing with science fiction.
As we had mentioned in our Cinema Classics show, perhaps a big influence on this writer-director and all science fiction films is Steven Spielberg. And I'd like to think that our director does know about and does admire.
Oh, there's no question he knows Spielberg's films.
Yeah.
How can you not?
Yeah,
I mean, seriously.
I'm thinking of one of my fave is Close Encounters of a Third Kind, which is the opposite of this. This is embracing the invasion, a very optimistic view of it. And I think Spielberg catches it. That's where our current film doesn't quite have that all-embracing feel about humanity.
No. This film, The End of Oak Street, is much more like Twilight Zone episodes.
Yes.
It's much more the family, how the nuclear family of the 60s, which is still consistent with the family of the 80s, reacts to a completely unexpected, no way to prepare for it situation. And does that family crumble? Do they fall apart? Do they rally around each other? And that's what this film is really trying to explore.
Yeah, and I'm getting tired of the family motif. Let's get something else. Because if it isn't here, it's some Marvel movie or somewhere where the dad is looking to connect with the daughter.
Well, if you don't like the family motif, then there is the teenage sex and death in Cat Miasma, where there is no family representation at all.
You do a good job, but that didn't make me feel like I should go out there and see it. It's maybe just a tad too out there for me.
I would see it because it is a tad too out there. I would see it because we don't get the opportunity to see films like this that are good very often. Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma went unfunded. They pitched this story to every major studio. No studio would touch it. Finally, the distribution company she had partnered with came forward with money, and then Brad Pitt's company, Plan B, who has come to the rescue, particularly on films with female themes or LGBTQ themes, came to the rescue and put up the rest of the money. I appreciate the fact that Brad Pitt is doing this. We would not have had Women Talking a couple of years ago if it hadn't been for Brad Pitt's Plan B.
Yeah.
We would not have had Sex and Death or Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma if it wasn't for Brad Pitt's Plan B.
All right, K.G. Klein, we're a bit away from the end of Oak Street, but we need to end our discussion. And as always, you will be ending it by recommending. Or
it's a fun summer film. It's just not Jurassic Park. It's much more violent. It's much more graphic. Don't take anybody under 12.
Yes, right. You actually see people getting eaten by the dinosaurs.
Yeah, don't make your kids regret your decision.